You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Momutsi, alongside me as always, the one and only three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong. BJ, how you doing, my brother?
Oh, all good, Mo. And what's going on, my friend? What's going on in the world of the NBA?
Oh, it's a nice week for us here in the UK, BJ. Time zone change for you on the West Coast means the games are just 1 hour earlier, which is fantastic. Yes. I just completed day one of Ramadan.
Oh,
my big bottle of water here. I've got about 20 more minutes left as we take this show to continue consuming.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. When you were playing in the league, did you ever notice mid-season that the referees would all of a sudden start refereeing a game differently?
I did not.
Well, here's something interesting for you. Since the All-Star break, free throws across the league are down 5.3 per game. There's five free throws less every single game. Now, I read this online. I've got some data here. Before the All-Star break, there were about 45 free throws every game between both teams. Since the break, a sample of 141 games, that number is down to just 40. Now, last season, pre-All-Star break and post-All-Star break, there was no drop-off. And also looking at the three-point attempts per game, because there's a link between three-pointers and free throws. The more you attack the basket, the more you can get to the free throw line. There's basically no change in 3 points attempted per game before and after the All-Star break. So, looking at the number of free throws being down, do you think from watching the games, the referees are swallowing the whistle, or do you think that free throws are just down because Embiid's not played any basketball since the All-Star break and he's pulled the league average up with his foul baiting?
Pretty funny. I don't think that the officials are calling. I think the officials are just, you know, that I think they have adapted to the way the game is played today. And when you watch the game, like the other, I was watching, well, the other game we did, the
Milwaukee Bucks and LA Milwaukee Clippers. If you didn't see that, we did a live stream on Playback. It was fantastic. The vibes were there, the energy were there. And if you missed out, you don't want to miss the next one.
So there was a stretch during the game where there was like four 3-point shots in a row, you know, just like one team comes down to shoot, bang, 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 right? Mm. And I was thinking to myself, wow, like that must be fun to play in. You shoot a three, okay, my turn to shoot a three. And then you shoot a three. And I thought, wow, like there was no resistance on the defense. You know, and I was thinking to myself, like, when you're on a good team, you never take the first available shot that becomes available. You seek the shot that your offense or your scheme or what you're trying to do. And I thought, these guys are just shooting the first shot available.
Absolutely.
Now, I didn't say that. But when you play like that, the referees kind of just adjust to how you play. So if you're just coming down, shoot a three, and then you shoot a three, the referees are like, oh, okay, this is how the game is going to be played. There's no trying to get contact. There's no, you know, you're not trying to play a physical brand of basketball. So to me, that seems just about normal. However, once the playoffs begin, there's going to be some game plans. There's going to be some, well, let's exploit this matchup. So during the regular season, Mo, I just don't see a lot of game planning, the way teams play to take advantage of mismatches or matchups. And I think as a result, they're not getting to the free throw line. But that's just me watching the game.
But that's the same before and after the All-Star break. But since, maybe I shouldn't say the All-Star break, since Joe Dumars came out and said that the league is going to have to come and look at the amount of scoring in NBA games currently, do you think they have told the referee silently, you know, let's just stop them getting to the line so much? Just take it down by a little much.
I don't think so. I know what why would they do that? What would they get out of it?
Because the scoring inflation has got out of hand. And fans who watch the full games, it's not the same as it used to be. You're essentially watching an All-Star game every night you tune in sometimes.
Well, the one thing that has noticeable to me is ever since the commissioner came out and said, we're going to have to get back to some level of balance. Maybe the game is too tilted towards the offense.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are aware that a shift is needed. And in talking to clients, players who play in the NBA, and talking to coaches and executives, it is very obvious that everyone has succumbed to the following. It's impossible to play defense in the way the rules are, you know, the way the rules are interpreted from the referees now. That's just what it is. Like, there's no hand checking. There's no impeding progress. How are you supposed to stop these guys? The offense now is more physical than the defense. What are you supposed to do? So in saying that, I even noted when we were watching the game, like, well, how often do you watch a game where you don't see another team like extend their defense to the backcourt? Mm-hmm. We were watching Milwaukee.
Shots, Pat Bev.
And yes, I mean, very rarely do you see an entire game where neither team tries to press or trap or do anything to cause a turnover. Now, is that because they can't do it? Maybe. Is that because they don't have the personnel? Maybe. But there isn't too much defense. There aren't too many defensive schemes or defensive things that you see these coaches are doing. There's no creativity anymore on the defensive end. Now, maybe there'll be some different things once the playoffs begin.
Well,
but you don't see that now during the regular season.
What we did see when we were doing that watch along is the Milwaukee Bucks went heavily into that Giannis and Dame two-man game, especially the pick and roll.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter.
Too much, yeah. You know. And so when you talk about the game plans for the playoffs, at what point in the season do coaches start to kind of start integrating stuff? Because you can't just flip a switch when it gets to the playoffs and say, okay, cool, here's the game plan. At what point, now the All-Star break's done, do you think we're going to start to see more game planning from teams as they prepare for the postseason?
Well, what you're going to see now as the season is coming to, the season's winding down, is now the teams who are in the playoffs or trying to get into the playoffs, you know, every game now has playoff implications. So you're going to begin to see the rotations shrink a little bit. You're going to see teams now begin to display what we call need plays. And as we were witnessing the fourth quarter, they basically had one play. I'm going to get the ball to my two best players, yep. Dame and Giannis on one end, and let's see what happens and force the other team to stop it. And I think because of personnel, you know, the way that the Clippers decided to defend it, they weren't very successful. But why show everything now how you would defend screen roll? Because every team is scouting, right? Right now, most of the teams are advanced scouting, especially the teams you know you're going to play. Well, this is how we have seen them play the screen roll. So defensively, I can respect Ty Lue and what he was doing. Because if you recall, James Harden didn't come in till like late in that game. And yeah. I'm sure Ty Lue, if it was a playoff game or meaningful game for them, every game is meaningful. However, I don't think Ty Lue, because when he had three key guys out for him, you know, Kawhi Leonard didn't play, Paul George didn't play, Russell Westbrook is out with an injury. So he just decided to just, you know, play his guys and see what happens. And they played a very good game all the way to the end. So, you know, you don't want to put too much, you know, you don't want to put too much into these games. However, for the Milwaukee Bucks, I thought it was an important game. I thought it was a must win for them, just to, you know, what I saw, because they need that game to stay in the standings where they want to be, especially out there in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it is kind of tight. You know, they're just one game ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. The Knicks are right. Getting OG Anunoby back. So it's going to be a tough finish. When it comes to the home court advantage in the playoffs, we obviously know that that's absolutely huge for a lot of teams. But how do you balance keeping your players fresh for the postseason and going for the high seeds? Because even in the Western Conference, when you look at the top of the race there, the Thunder right now, as we record this, are at the top. The Nuggets are half a game behind. The Timberwolves are 1.5 game behind. And the Clippers are 3.5 games behind.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, I mean, Mo, you hear me say this all the time. I think there's a sweet spot for starters in this league. That's anywhere from like 33 to no more than 37 minutes a night. You know, once you start getting over 35 minutes a night as a starter for an 82 games schedule, it takes a very special athlete to do that. Once you get into 37, 40 minutes, you start really putting, I think, stress on the player's body to perform. You know, once you get to the playoffs, because the games are played at a much higher intensity than they are during the regular season. So I just think you have to be aware of the players. I think you have to coach. You know, you hear me say this all the time. You have to have depth with your roster. You want to be able to exercise or at least play 10 or more players. I think 10 players is probably the sweet spot for me if I were coaching.
Yeah, because you still want the chance to see what your end of the bench guys can do to see what they can do in the playoffs if you need them.
Well, you're it's not if you're going to need them. Like, that's just, no one is going to win with five guys, so you're going to need those
Don't tell
players. So
Tom
you
Thibodeau.
hey, again, if you're going to win, you're going to need those guys. So, okay, so like, people like to say, well, I want to see. No, you're going to need 10 or more guys. Injuries are going to happen. Believe it or
Different
not,
matchups.
even your great players aren't going to have a great game. You're going to have to find a combination that works. So it is the coach's responsibility to figure out the best combination. You're going to need all 12 to 15 guys, or whatever it is now. And at the very least, you're going to have 10 guys that's going to have to play, because you can't keep playing these guys 37, 38, 40 minutes a night. You just can't do it. So I think that is, especially the way you play today, they play much faster. So how are you going to play faster and more minutes? That's counterintuitive to what we're trying to do here if we're going to get through an 82 game schedule.
Absolutely. Well, it was announced yesterday that the Utah Jazz are waiving Otto Porter Jr. Now, March the 1st was the deadline for players to be on the buyout market or the waiver list to join a team and be eligible to play in the playoffs. And a lot of people were surprised that the Utah Jazz waived him at this point in the season. But Otto Porter Jr., only 30 years old, has come out and announced his retirement after 11 years in the NBA. What are your thoughts, BJ?
I would suspect, you know, when you see things like this, right? When you see things that are kind of, you know, kind of like, wow, what's going on there? I would suspect there's probably something going on physically with him that we probably will learn at a much later date.
Yeah,
Like,
he's played
something.
23 games over the last two seasons with some foot injuries going on.
Yeah, I would, that was just, that's just when I heard that, I thought, oh, maybe there's something here that, you know what? There's nothing you can do. He's probably tired of rehabbing or whatever the case may be. And it may be time to just move on to the next phase of your life. So, you know, hopefully everything is well, but that's what it appears to be to me. If you're asking me what do I think is going on there, something physically is going on, medically is going on, I should say. And hopefully he can well, you said he retired. So, you know,
Yeah.
I guess, well, we say congratulations, I guess, to a
He
great
won a
career.
championship with Golden State
Yes,
2022.
yes,
Yeah,
yes,
shout out
yes.
to Otto Porter Jr. Well, to end this episode, we have a list here from the good people at Bleacher Report, which
Okay.
contains every legit NBA contender's fatal flaw. There's eight teams on their list. I'm going to tell you
Oh.
the team, and I want you to guess what Bleacher Report thinks their
This is
biggest
a
flaw
team or
is.
player?
Team.
Team. Okay.
Team. So number one, the Boston Celtics. What do you think their biggest flaw is going into the playoffs?
Depth.
Wrong.
Okay, what
It
is it?
says late game execution.
You know, I want to talk about that. Do we have 30 seconds to talk about
No,
this?
we have all the time in the
Yeah.
world. I'm actually
Okay.
making a YouTube video about that, as we speak.
Okay, everyone's talking about late game execution. Okay. Unless I missed something, these guys have played in probably more pressure games than anyone over the last couple of years, especially in the playoffs. Talking about the Boston Celtics.
Because they always find a way to make life difficult, even in the early rounds.
So, what part of the late game execution am I supposed to look at here? Because I saw a guy score over 50 points, I believe, in
I
game
think game
seven.
seven, shots, Jason Tatum.
So, what is the problem
Should I
here?
tell you my problem, BJ?
Yes, tell me your problem here.
And I alluded to this previously, but Let me break it down, because I've gone through and I've watched all the late game situations that they've been in and the close games that they've been in. And I've gone back and I've watched them over previous years as well. The difference this season, and my biggest pet peeve, is not the insistence on shooting threes. My biggest pet peeve is when it gets to the final couple minutes in a close game, here's what the Celtics do. They inbound the ball to Jason Tatum. He kind of walks up the court. The shot clock gets to about 18 or 19 as he crosses the halfway line. Then he gets into a dribble combo. You got about 14 seconds left on the clock. And then you know he's going to shoot a contested jumper. When you look at all his game winners in previous years and all the big clutch shots that he scored, a lot of them, he's caught the ball, even if it's on the three-point line, it's still below the free throw line. So on the wings, where he can get into a move. Or he's coming off a screen and catching the ball to operate. And there's only been a couple instances where he's actually done his whole dribble, 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 shoot combination from the perimeter. So I wonder if that's something that, like you say, they're going to wait for the playoffs to rectify, or if that's just what Joe Mazzulla is telling him to do now, go out there and win us the game, rather than putting him in that same position. I think we spoke about this on an episode last week. That's the biggest thing that I've noticed.
I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned here because to me, it's a very simple thing. I never second guess coaching, because coaching is very difficult and I respect it. But here is the obvious. You have an elite offensive player in Jason Tatum. There's no doubt about it. Now, he's not good. He's an elite offensive player. He's also a player who can score utilizing the dribble, right? That's one thing he can do. He can create space for himself. Now, as a coach, every coach's job, if you will, is to make sure you know where your best player needs the ball to operate versus an elite defensive team or player. Once you play an elite defensive team, you have three dribbles max. So if you ever watch the game, right? Everyone says the game has changed and all that, you know, all that nonsense, right? Oh, this era is better than that era. You know, okay. Here's the truth. The truth is every team is running the same thing since 1946. Okay. Nothing's changed. But let's just say it's changed, Mo, because we're cool with the times of 2024. So we're cool. We see something that they weren't doing in the 70s or the 60s or whenever. Okay. The ball still goes in the basket. The other team takes it out unless you score, but it's a new game. Jason Tatum, if there's anything that I would suggest to him, is to figure out how you can score the ball in three or less dribbles. Wherever that is on the floor.
Well, a lot of his old game winners were scored in exactly that way.
Okay, whatever it is, like, it is the coach's job to say, Jason Tatum, you know, for instance, let's talk about one of the elite scorers, you know, in the 2000s. That was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, we knew that he was going to get the ball in a couple of areas. He was going to either go to the post, or he was going to go to the pinch post, and he was going to force the defense, and he was going to will the defense to do what he wanted to do so that he could get a shot. Tim Duncan, we knew where he was going to get the ball. We know where great players are going to operate from. Now, Jason Tatum, you can choose. Jason Tatum is big enough to play from the post, and he has shown that he has the ability to play from the pinch post if he so desires. However, for whatever reason, he wants to play and dribble and whatever it is he does. Now, he's capable of doing that. I remember your Celtics, when they won a championship last, they would get that ball to Paul Pierce at the free throw line, and then they would play.
Okay. That was good times.
Okay. Jokic, we know we're going to get him the ball below the free throw line, and then we're going to operate and force the team to double play straight up, whatever it is. That is championship caliber basketball. The Warriors, even they don't even have a post player, But they like to get the ball to the post and run their splits and get the ball moving to find their best scorer, which happens to be Steph Curry. So we know that this has been going on, no matter how you want to slice it or dice it, the same exact area. There's two operating areas on the floor that will demand you to pay attention. You get the ball to your best player on the post, or we get it to him on the pinch post. And the pinch post, we know, is a place that you can't double team because of the spacing on the floor. Probably the only, not probably, it's the only place that you really can't double team. So Jason Tatum has a choice. Joe Mazzulla could be saving this. Why show everything now so that teams can't? Yes, who knows? However, he has not one player. He has two players that can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not concerned because you can't tell. And the reason I'm not concerned is because defensively, they've played against Giannis and beat him. They've played against Kevin Durant and beat him. They've played against Jimmy Butler and beat them. He's played against Steph Curry. Okay, they didn't beat him, but they had to defend him.
They're up 2-1. And then
they
broke my heart.
So they know how to defend against a great player. So if they know how to defend against a great player, why wouldn't they know how to get their own great player the ball where they need it? So I'm not concerned. I know we just need stuff to talk about. However, I'm going to give Joe the benefit of the doubt. By the way, they have the best record in the league, so he's doing something correct. And then let's see. But when they start doing it later in the playoffs, let's not come back, and I'm not going to say I told you so, but I can assure you, Joe has this figured out.
Okay.
They have to get it figured
out. Let's go through the rest of the list then.
Yes.
Cleveland Cavaliers, biggest weak point going into the playoffs.
3-point shooting.
Yeah, they're non-shooting big men. When Mobley and Allen are on the court together, they have a 109.1 offensive rating. There are only three teams with a worse offensive rating, a less efficient offense than when those two are on the court together. And all three of those teams have winning percentages below 35%. The Denver Nuggets, an easy one for you. You know what the answer will be.
Their depth.
Yeah, lack of reliable depth. But I'm a believer. The Clippers, biggest weak point.
Interior defense.
Yeah, defensive limitations. The Milwaukee Bucks.
Defense, period.
Yeah, defensive breakdowns. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to go through that. The Minnesota Timberwolves, though, aside from injuries, injuries aren't on the board here.
Shot selection.
Close, very close. Is actually turnover trouble.
Oh, really?
Their 14.7 turnover percentage is the seventh worst mark in the league. The six teams who turn the ball over have more than them have a combined record of 151 to 224. So they're not taking care of the ball. The New Orleans Pelicans, your favorite team right now.
They don't get it. Fast break. They don't get any easy shots.
No. They do get some easy shots for the first three quarters, but they're fourth quarter failures. But it gets to the fourth quarter, the Pelicans drop to 24th in efficiency. In clutch situations, they're in 28th place in the league in terms of getting shots.
Interesting.
They're the only team in the NBA to not make a fourth quarter comeback this season from when they've been down. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
They never, with the exception of, Alvarado, they never extend their defense. Like, I'm giving these offenses credit because I haven't played in this era. But you got to do something. When I watch them play, okay, CJ McCollum is not a defensive player. Zion doesn't, you know, it's not like Zion plays like full court basketball. When I say full court basketball, on the defensive end.
Yeah,
on the defensive end. And then you have a big guy. I mean, he's not like athletic, you know, Valanciunas. So they kind of like play a half court defense. Now, I think they are effective because they're big and strong and they're athletic for the most part, but they don't extend. So I just think it's just a matter of committing and saying we have to be disruptive. Like, I want to be disruptive.
Well, the good news is, BJ, in the first half of games, the only team with a better offense than them is the Boston Celtics. So the first half of the games go perfectly for the Pelicans. The third quarters go all right. And then the fourth quarters, they melt down. And I think it's got to be more than just not picking up full court pressure on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I can say this. I think I can say this in a nice way. You know, when you watch them play, Zion is the point guard. And I don't get it, but I'm going to keep watching because I'm always trying to learn. Why is Zion? And if I, you know, as I watch him, I'm going, who can stop him on the post? Why is he? Well, it's not even in the post. It's not even on the post. It's just like, okay, it's the fourth quarter. The game is kind of stagnant for the most part. Hey, it's time to win the game. And your best player has a choice. You could. There's only two. I just said it earlier. There's only two places you can catch the ball. So we know that. And who can stop Zion on the post? Like, and he's a good enough passer to.
He's a pass very good passer.
So why are we having him at the point guard position? Like, I watched him play Atlanta last night. He was bringing the ball up the court the whole game. Now they won. They played. They won big. But I was like, that's interesting. Like, here's a guy. Why is he the point guard on this team?
Point Zion. Because they don't have a real point guard. This goes back to what we talked about last week.
Yeah, that's fine. But you have a special player who no one can guard. No one can guard him on the post. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to shoot it. You can guard it. They double team him. He passes out for a three, right? Isn't that what you want? Like, who can guard him?
Ain't no one. The last team on the list, the OKC Thunder. The only team in the NBA other than the Celtics who are top five in offense and defense, but what's their biggest flaw?
Yeah. I saw them play the other day. Well, their biggest flaw, they're little.
Yeah, almost. It's rebounding.
Yeah, they're little. They often lose
that rebounding battle.
Yeah, they're just a tough. Little team. Yeah, I mean, they're tall with Chet, clearly, but they're a little team. And yeah, that makes sense. Rebounding that makes sense.
Yeah, those are who Bleacher Report thinks are the top eight contenders.
So what you're saying is the championship is up in the air this year. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying Denver's going to win a championship. The Denver one was questionable depth. Keep asking questions. They're going to prove you wrong. I'm good, but maybe it's up in the air. What do I know?
Okay.
But that's another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast. Make sure you guys tune in every single day, Monday to Friday. BJ and I are here. And make sure you follow the show, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast from. Most importantly, until next time, get buckets.